So we've got an interview this week.
Yeah, we have. Real good one.
Yeah, and that is the problem, isn't it? That's what I want to talk to you about. Because okay. I think we have problems with our interviewees in that I don't think it reflects well on us.
Well, no. I think I know where you're going, yeah.
Because they're always so intelligent and articulate with such wonderful things to say. And they make us look bad, Joe.
I just feel like the 17 deserve a break every now and then.
That's fair enough, yeah. Yeah, they do actually, because they stick with us a long time and they need some content.
They've been so faithful and long serving. Give them a treat every now and then.
Welcome everybody to episode 319 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page. And there is Joe Davis.
Hello. Well, here we are. Mm. And you're right, we have got a really good interview this week. No thanks to the interviewer, I hasten to add, but the person being interviewed is magnificent. Absolutely brilliant, yeah.
So we'll get straight onto that pretty much, but first the normals. How are you?
Oh, thank you. I'm going through a phase where I'm having to have very strong words with the divine at the moment. We haven't got time to talk about it all now, but, you know, let's just say another friend died on Sunday and I should be doing the funeral and I've had enough now. So, yeah, that's enough of that nonsense. I did have a good day last Saturday, though. We had a little joint birthday meals and we did all the courses and the little wine flight and everything. That's good. And now I'm not drinking. So that's the summary of my week.
Wait a minute. Whose birthday was it?
Well, technically my 60th is coming up, as you well know. Someone else in the group had a birthday before then. And then we just thought, why don't we just celebrate all our birthdays? Because we can't do this every time. So did I send you the 8-course menu?
I don't think you did, but I was just worried I'd missed your birthday then.
I know you haven't missed it, no.
It's coming. That's a relief.
You got a few weeks.
I mean, I will miss it.
Yeah, I know you will.
I'm building you up for it, but I just didn't want to have missed it.
Of course you will.
Oh, well, that sounds nice.
We're going away for my 60th, as you well know, with some dear friends, so that would be good. Anyway, yes, how are you, dear boy?
Yes, I've been a bit fragile, I think, sort of a bit of mental health stuff, really. But what I'm really worried about is Claire's going to try and get me to go out and enjoy myself. That's what I'm worried about.
Well, that's a constant fear for you, isn't it?
I can see her planning it to take me out of myself. Why is it extroverts always think that the cure introverts need is to go out more? I don't understand.
Well, of course it is.
I don't really understand how that works. Anyway, but apart from that, I've been okay. Enjoyed the rugby. That was marvellous.
Yes.
And the other thing, so we've been having flooding again in our area. You know, the road down the bottom gets flooded and it's just there's standing water on it most of the year round.
Who can forget the car?
But this was a problem last year as well. And so I wanted to sort of get in touch with someone in the council, and you can't do that now. You have to post it on a website called Fix My Street.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So you go there and you put in... you know, what the problem is, i.e. this has been flooding, it flooded last year, you've had, you know, 18 months to do something about it, can you tell me what you're going to do? I was very polite, you know, it wasn't rude or anything.
Yeah, cool. Oh, well done. So,
and then it posts, and then you get an update on it. You think, oh, that's exciting, I've got an update on it. But the update is merely when other people post the same complaint.
Oh, really?
So I'm now deluged, pinged by complaints from Fix My Street because the street hasn't been fixed. And, you know, I don't know, it gives all the impression of being a handy way of reporting things without working. You know, that's how it is, really. Anyway, but apart from that, I'm pretty good, thanks. Yeah, I'm
great.
Good.
Okay, well, we should move on. So, beloved listener and one of the 17, Cathy wrote in, following our brief chat about patriarchy the other week, where we said, look, we're not the right people to talk about this. And someone still wrote in and said that I mansplained it after saying we wouldn't. I don't remember that. Anyway, Cathy wrote in and said, listen, I've just been reading this book by Daniel Strickland. She's great. You should get her on the show. And when Cathy says something, you know, you do it, don't you? So I contacted Daniel Strickland, who is a Canadian author and just, you know, really fabulous person. She's a speaker. She's a preacher. I think she was a major in the Salvation Army, actually. I think that's her background.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and just a wonderful person. I just thought she will be excellent to talk about patriarchy with, as indeed she was, as you're about to find out.
Well, I'm absolutely delighted to welcome to the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast the Canadian author, Daniel Strickland. Daniel, welcome.
Hey, thanks. Great to be with you.
It is so lovely. Now, you've written at least six books that I know of, The Other Side of Hope, Flipping the Script on Cynicism and Despair and Rediscovering Our Humanity. I mean, you think we need a book like that at the moment?
Well, even when I wrote it for myself, really. Actually, most of my books are like that. I needed to understand hope in a fresh way.
Great. More recently, you curated this book, Need to Know, Empowering Female Leadership and Why It's Essential for the Future of the Church. So I want to delve into some of that stuff. But before we do, for those of us who perhaps don't know you and aren't familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I am, you know, obviously a follower of Jesus. I'm married with three boys. So I have a house full of men, which I feel like was God's great way of helping me root for men and think positive thoughts. I spent the better part, just 23 years or so working in urban, you know, against urban poverty and sexual exploitation, doing church planting with the Salvation Army. So I have a Salvation Army background. And then the last 7-8 years have really just given myself to helping to imagine what the kingdom looks like in real life. So just launching nonprofits and sort of at the intersection of faith and justice, you know, what would it look like if we made room for everyone? And we've started a tiny house movement in people's backyards to make room for vulnerable people to stop houselessness. And, you know, where we do this Women Speaker Collective, where we really help women find their voice and use their voice, because we think the voices of women really will help in the world today. You know, all kinds of things, spiritual formation, a thing called Infinitum, which roots and establishes us in the love of God, and just looking through postures that we could live. So just a plethora. I keep busy.
Wow.
And love it. Love it.
All of that sounds amazing. And I really do want to talk to you about all of these things. But here's a bit of background for your benefit. So this podcast is hosted by two men. And it became clear that we really do need to sort of start talking about patriarchy, but we really didn't want to mansplain it, even though I was still accused of doing that. I would love for you to speak a little bit. I mean, I want to come back to your books and things, but how you see the influence of patriarchy, what you understand patriarchy is for some of our listeners who perhaps never even thought about it and its influence on church. I wonder if you could just help us get inside of that whole area.
Yeah. The simple explanation of patriarchy is a male centering and male ordering of the world. Hmm. So men are at the center and everything else rotates around men. And patriarchy, for the most part in our world, is a little bit like, you know, trying to spot it if it's your normal, which yes. It is everybody's normal.
Yeah.
Trying to spot it is like a bit like asking a fish how the water is, right? Mm-hmm. Just like the fish responds, what's water? So just to say, it's okay if you don't spot it or don't notice it. It's usually when you're when it becomes a toxic level that you start to notice it because of sickness, you know, because you're getting sick. I would say for me, it became really connected to me, both to my Christian walk, to my faith walk, and also to my work. So I was doing a lot of social justice work. And every time I would get to the root causes of injustices around the world, it would end up being patriarchy. Like, and I literally did not expect it, you know? So like the vast majority of victims, for example, in war, the vast casualties and victims of war are not male soldiers. The vast majority of victims and casualties of war are women and children. Yeah. And so, and just if you pick any issue, just keep picking at the issue, it's going to come back to this root cause of a male-centered power over women. And then if you're a Christian, if you're a Christian student at all, you'll start to realize, as I was pulling on these threads, even in my own study of injustices around the world, it's why one of the millennial development goals is, if we want the world to be a better place, we have to empower women. The reason they put that in there, they're not a Christian framework. They put that in there because actually the root causes of oppression and injustice around the world are patriarchy. So, and the disempowerment of women. And if you're a student of the Bible, you'll know that the very first story, you know, the Genesis account, the origin story of humanity, was this beautiful shared flourishing of men and women together. And that got distorted and kind of wrecked and ruined. And one of the results of the fallenness of the world is this disordering, or what I would say, one person, men, having power over women. And so I think that it's such a powerful root issue in the world because it's a root issue in the creative narrative. And ultimately, to be truly free, to be fully restored, to be properly redeemed, is to return to this origin sacred story of humanity. And that's a shared leadership and stewardship of the world.
That's beautiful. Although I assume that one of the ways patriarchy is kept alive and well in the church is by creating a theology that says, well, God's a man and, you know, God made men first. I think I've heard that one.
I mean, just men. Even to say that out loud, right? Like, God is male. I always say, people who say, and I get this a lot with men, Joe. So, like, first of all, I do want to say men do need to talk about patriarchy because patriarchy is a disordering of everybody's world. It's not good for women, of course, but it's also not good for men.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, and we need more men. It's not a woman, patriarchy is not a woman's issue. It's a human issue, and we need to address it that way. So I want to commend you, even if somebody calls you mansplainer or whatever, keep talking about patriarchy and keep actually tracing down the implications of how it harms men and how it harms relationships. And, you know, one of the things is, once you see it, you see it everywhere. So even, you know, I talk to Christians in marriages who struggle and oftentimes people struggle in Christian marriages because they have a very terrible theology that has embedded patriarchy into the relationship. Yeah. So they fully have been taught, and they're just trying to be good Christians, and they've been taught that men are the head of the household. You know, that's literally a line out of Paul's epistle, which has been misconstrued to mean authority over instead of authority with. And that word head, you know, translated everywhere else is source, not head. And it's all kinds of things, but basically patriarchy has even been the lens by which we've interpreted the Bible.
Of course.
And that's really scary to people. So again, when you talk about patriarchy, it scares people because then it's like, whoa, we have to read that again. What could it possibly mean if it doesn't mean that? And why have we just assumed that that's what it means? And what are the consequences of assuming that that's what it means? So there's been some beautiful research. There's a place called baremarriage.com, and they've been doing tons of research, even around marriage being redeemed and restored to be a shared stewardship, which is usually practically how marriage works. But when this terrible patriarchal control over enters into any spaces, any relationships, marriage or communities or churches, then you have a distorting of God's purposes. And then it's just painful for everybody.
I mean, a side issue here, I mean, joking about God being a man, I do find exclusively male pronouns for God quite unhelpful, because all it can do is reinforce an image that the divine themselves are male. So I mean, do you ever just deliberately? I mean, I like to call God she, and you know, find other ways of describing the divine other than father and he and him, and you know, some of us like to have fun with one or two of the songs we keep singing and mix things up there as well. What's your practice for helping you have a more expansive view of the divine?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think if you are to read the scriptures, you'll see a plethora of descriptions of God that are not male. So God obviously cares about this too. This isn't just like an yeah, us problem. Yeah. This is a God problem. Like God's like, how can I put it? God is like a father who welcomes a son. God is like a shepherd who goes after a sheep. Mm. God is like a widow searching for a coin. You know, I just preached to a bunch of pastors at a pastor's conference and said, like, let's just talk about the widow. God is a widow searching for a coin. You know, when's the last time you heard that description of God? God is a widow. Mm. And I think even like the root word of compassion that, you know, drove Jesus everywhere, the root word of compassion is womb. And you've got these like men describing compassion as moved in the guts. I'm like, nope, that's not quite it.
Really? Oh, wow.
My compassion is like, I got to give birth. And I know because I'm a woman. So like, I think the things that we're missing about who God is and how God relates to humanity. You know, that when Jesus is moved with compassion, he's like a mother that's going to give birth. There's no way to put that off. And he's willing to lose himself in the process, which is another. So you miss Jesus himself, you know, looks over Jerusalem and says, I long for you like a mother hen longs for her children. You know, that's not a male image. That's a female image. Jesus himself, who is limited to a male body.
Yeah.
But is actually wanting to say God is so much bigger and better and different from what your construct of a male religious controlling authoritative God looks like. So I think it's of great, you know, I think I wrote a book called Better Together, which is probably the most instructive of my books in terms of how to lead together. So in the early days, and depending on how much I want to tick people off, Joe, depending on how spicy you want to get.
Oh, we want spicy on this podcast, believe me.
Okay, so all you have to do is say that God is not male, and you will get vitriol responses. I mean, it's unbelievable. Like I have sworn on stages. I've like used like, you know, pretty intense imagery. I've like worked in the hood for years. I'll bring all these stories about sexually exploited women and men who buy. Everything's totally fine. I call Holy Spirit a she, which is my favorite practice because I think Holy Spirit has the most feminine attributes. And so I'll call Holy Spirit she, and I'll get hate mail. I mean, I'll get canceled. I'll get like, and I'm like, really, that was it? The Holy Spirit is a she, is the one that did it? You know, it's just crazy. So Nikki Gumbel posted the other day. Nikki Gumbel, I mean, who doesn't love that guy? He's like the safest guy on the planet in so many ways. And he posted, you know, God is not male or female. He just like, God is beyond gender. And you should just watch the comments.
Oh, wow.
It's unbelievable, Joe. Like people are literally in capital letters with like exclamation marks going, God is male. You know, wow. I'm like, do these guys understand that saying God is male is heretical? It is a heresy to say that. It is literally a church heresy to say that God is male. And yet here you are defending it. You know, that's how entrenched this mindset is. And I always say to people, like, if it's not a big deal, because people will say, why make it a big deal? Like, just like God is a father. So what? Like, it's just an image. Don't make it a big deal. I'm like, well, then if it's not a big deal.
Let's make God a mother.
Something different. Like say mother, I dare you. Just this Sunday, say mother, you know? And I'm telling you, it will like cause such a big. And one of the things, Joe, I've discovered about prophetic things, like when you can recognize a stronghold or an idol, not in the pronouncing, not in the pronouncement against it. That's just normal prophet work, but in the reaction to it. Always in the reaction to the word that you find the stronghold or the idol. So, and this is one of those spaces where people react so disproportionately to the idea of God not being male. You understand this thing is a stronghold. It's an idol.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, for sure. I want to bounce off in so many directions, but I want to try and stay. I think we've already been talking about the ways patriarchy kind of manifests itself in church structures and leadership. Are there any other things you want to say about that, particularly specific to the church? How is this sort of insidious patriarchy, how does it sort of pollute us and hinder us, I guess, in our development as followers of Christ?
Well, I mean in every single way. And I think this is the tragedy of patriarchy. It is a disease. It's a malformation, and it distorts our view of God. So we've just talked about that. So we only see God through the lens of male, and we miss the bigness, the grandness, the deepness, the beautifulness of God as a result. And even the fact that even we're scared of that is also sad. You know, you're scared of exploring the mystery. I mean, this is what Paul said, the mystery, who is Christ. I mean, you're scared of that. That's kind of sad, really, really sad indictment around where we are in our Christian discipleship. I think it malforms and distorts our relationships with each other. And this might be the greatest tragedy. And, you know, like I've mentioned marriage a little bit, even just how we interact in marriage. So there was some research that said that Christian marriages were some of the unhappiest, which might explain our divorce rates being just like a percentage or two ahead of everyone else.
Is that true? Oh my goodness. Oh,
well, I don't know about your country, but I know that's true in North America. But also it's because of these weird constructs that we put on. When we put a male centering of a marriage, the only way that's going to work is if a woman fits that pattern. So if a woman submits to that pattern, so a woman has to make herself less in order for a man to feel more, that's not really love. That's control. That's authority. And if you make that in relationships as well, if somebody has to be smaller than they really are in order for somebody else to feel bigger than they really are, that's not a genuine relationship. That's a distortion of a real relationship. So that's true in churches. I know churches, I do this thing called Women Speaker Collective, where I train women to use their voices. And I mean, think about it. When you go to church, how many women do you hear speak?
Yeah, for sure.
It's a minority. I mean, I've been at places where I'm the first woman speaker at events, and people have like, I would have women lined up. That's why I got into this. I wrote a book called The Liberating Truth, How Jesus Empowers Women, because I was speaking at like Spring Harvest years and years ago, like 20 years ago, as the Bible teacher. I think I was the first female Bible teacher at that conference. And I had women lining up afterwards saying, how are you doing this? And I'm like, what do you mean? How am I? Like, I don't even understand the question. And then they would explain one by one, I'm not allowed to do this. My dad said I couldn't go to, I had women at this boot camp whose father, this is an American woman, and her father said to her, beautiful relationship with her dad, or her dad said, you could be anything you want. You'd be president of the United States. She went away to a youth camp. She got called to ministry. She came home, said, I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to preach and I'm supposed to be a pastor. And her dad said, accept that. He refused to give her money to go to school. He's never come to hear her speak. He's like cut off that ministry. She could be anything in the world she wants to be, except the thing God made her to be. How is that honoring? How is that good? How is that even possibly connected to the God that we serve? So it is super distorting. And for church pastors, you know, in America, this is the first time in American church history, there's more men than women in church.
Oh, is that right?
And it's not because the church is growing, Joe. So over 60% of the exodus from American churches right now, this is why I wrote this book. This brings us to this latest book, Need to Know. Over 60% of the mass exodus, so more people have exited Christian churches in America over the last 10 years than came to church through the Great Awakening. That's what kind of exodus it is. And 60% of them are female.
That's fascinating.
And I say to pastors and leaders, church leaders all the time, you need to know. You need to know some stuff that you obviously don't know, because you are not getting it. And the empowering of everybody, including the deconstructing of things that are harmful, is paramount for you to understand the possible flourishing of the church in the next season.
How do you think we go about redressing the balance? How do we start to disintegrate patriarchy? You know, someone sent in this absolutely hideous text. You'll be surprised to hear it was written by a man, and it was about denying yourself. Jesus's command for us to deny ourselves means, you know, giving up everything and denying our truest self. Denying our truest self. That's what this text was saying. And interestingly, Rachel, my wife, made a comment to me. She said, the thing is, women don't need to deny themselves. They need to find themselves. She said, you need to deny yourself.
Well, this
But
is
women
this
need
is
to find themselves.
Yes, and this is so interesting, Joe, because first of all, what a terrible toxic theology poor person's been raised with.
Yeah. Yeah.
And again, this is the confusion for listeners. This is just confusing the selves in the scripture. There is the created true self that God calls sacred and very, very good. And then there is the false self or the distorted self or the sinful self. So I always say sin's not the first word. It's not the last word. It's the middle word. And there's a remedy for it. And so God came to actually restore us to our true selves, not to, but it's the false self that we need to say no to. So anyway, terrible theology. I'm sorry that guy's in that theology because it's very toxic to your own life and to the people around you. But I will say this, this is really fascinating. The I was speaking at a church during COVID. They had me and they were doing the Better Together series, but the pastor reached out to me ahead of time and he said, look, whatever you do, or he said, I need you to know, like, we're complementarian church. In other words, complementarian is just a word for patriarchy that sounds better. We're a male-centered, male authority driven church. And there's layers of this. Some people will call themselves soft complementarians. Some people will call themselves like full complementarians, but ultimately it's just patriarchy. It's all patriarchy disguised as theology. And I think it's one of the most toxic ways to do church. So they know that. They know I've written this book. They know what I feel. It's not like a secret. I'm not going around going like, well, don't tell anybody, but I don't like patriarchy. I'm like, it's one of the core enemies of the liberating truth, you know, the liberating message of Jesus. And so he said, but, you know, Arch, we're going to do this and we're going to interview you. And he said to me, we have a woman in our church that we're using as an example. You know, she's amazing. She's a great leader. She's a great communicator, actually. But she chooses not to use her gifts in this church because of our stand. Mm. And we just think, like, what a humble example.
Mm.
And I said to him, what a horrific example. And he said, what do you mean? Like, isn't that humility? And I said, no, see, the kingdom, this is the whole point of Jesus's humility, is the person with the most power, the person with the most authority, the person who has the most power, gives up their power for the person or the people with the least. That's the kingdom example of humility. Mm-hmm. What you're doing is you're taking someone with no power, giving her less power, and saying that's humility. That is the opposite of humility. I have a name for that. It's called oppression. That's oppression, brilliant. Not absolutely. Humility.
Yeah.
And this, one of my major things when I'm speaking to women and teaching women, I'm like, you know, this false humility of pretending you're less than you really are, or agreeing that you're less than you really are, is toxicity. It's just oppression disguised as a spiritual practice. It is horrific. And by the way, Joe, Jesus never practiced any of this patriarchal things. He just, he refused to comply with systems that oppressed women, that exiled women, that like excluded women from discipleship, from leadership. He refused it. Even to the very final resurrection account where he said to the women, go tell the men. I mean, it's just, Jesus is exploding the construct of patriarchy in his time and in his day.
Well, this is so great. Thank you for all that you're saying. I want to ask about, first of all, let's come at this from a selfish angle, because I want to ask, what can men do to be part of the solution? What wisdom do you have for men who want to be advocates of this, who want to be to do something about the mess the church is in?
Yeah. So there's a couple things. I mean, I think you do what advocates are supposed to do. So one, I think just seeing it is like a big deal. So men, you know, it's not going to help you to see it. You know, it's in your best interest to not see it. So you see a lot of men just refusing to see it because it's in their best interest not to see it. So one is what I would call like an awakening. So I think for you to see it is a great step. Then I think for you to speak about it, to tell the truth about it, and to really reckon with what the cost of it has been, you know, what the cost of it has been. Then you kind of, that's kind of like that, blessed are those who, you know, poverty in spirit and mourning, you know, the first step of the Beatitudes is like, ah, I was part of this. I'm complicit in this. I'm stuck in this, but we don't stay there. Then we start actually doing some things differently. So again, those idea, those with the most power, actually let go of that power. They don't have to hang on to it or grab it or grasp it. They can give it away. because of the kingdom, because of the way Jesus' kingdom works. So I would say do a lot more of what Jesus did. Refuse to comply with systems that exclude and oppress. I've actually been thinking a lot about this. Like, I don't think Jesus actually ever went inside the temple, which I think he always taught from Solomon's colonnade. So I'm researching this, so don't like quote me on it later, but I'm just like, it's a rabbit hole I'm following because I think Jesus refused to comply with exclusion. I think Jesus like personally refused to comply with places that excluded. And I wonder, you know, like if I talk to men about this all the time, if you're at a conference and it's all men speaking, maybe you refuse to comply with it.
Yeah.
Maybe you give up your spot for a woman. I mean, this is when it gets really tricky. When men are like, what? Give up my spot for a woman? You know, like, or maybe you call it out, you know, maybe you start actually saying to churches and again, refusing to comply with complementarianism. Like I used to say to women, you know, maybe we work for change. Maybe we work for change. Now I'm just like, just leave. We just don't have time. Like there's a whole world that needs redeeming and God wants to use everybody's gifts. So what if we just stopped complying with systems that oppress, systems that exclude, systems that segregate, systems that, you know, Jesus literally said to us, Joe, don't lead like the Romans in a hierarchical way, like where some of you lord over other people.
Yeah.
You know, what is patriarchy if it isn't that?
Yeah.
You know, and systems of patriarchy, like systems of hierarchy, really from a patriotic, patriarchy's lens, end up just subjecting women, you know, into lower and lower and lower places. So I think you have to stop complying with it. I think you got to name it when you see it. I think you actually have to give up some things and some spaces so that women can step in and speak. And then I often say to folks, a lot of men who've asked me, that's why I wrote Need to Know, or I just compiled it. I didn't write it. It was 26 different authors. But men said to me, what do I do? And I really have said, look, I really love the applause. It's really nice for you to cheer on women. But we're going to need a little bit more. You can cheer on women, but then also we need a little bit more. We're going to need like some funding. We're going to need some positions. We're going to need some like places where women can actually advance, like support some women to actually do the thing that they feel called to do.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Danny, I'm really conscious of time. I want to talk to you for hours, but I gather that wasn't the time slot I was given. So I want to ask about, how do people find out more about you? Do you have a website? Tell us a little bit more about the books that you've got in your arsenal of books that you've written now. And what book would you recommend for perhaps some of the women who are listening to this and wanting to explore this a bit more?
Yeah, and I would say men and women both. And I speak to women a fair bit to say, like, we also need to see these things because we've accepted things as normal that are not normal.
Yeah.
And we've accepted things as godly that are not godly, actually. And it's not until you really read it again. Like Joe, I'm not worried about the time, by the way. But But Acts 16, I just reread Acts 16. My mind's been blown. So for years and years and years, I believed Acts 16 is when Paul goes to Europe for the first time. I actually spoke this at in an England thing, saying like, hey, you want to know your origin story? Here it is. Paul goes into Europe. And one of the first things that happens is he goes into the city. And you remember there's a girl who is under the control of, is oppressed by a python spirit. You know, what does a python spirit do? I don't, it sucks the life out of you. That's what it does.
Wow.
And she keeps crying out these demons. She's following Paul around. She's crying out, which by the way, that word cry out is the same word that Jesus responds to in the scripture when people are asking for help. And I have heard it preached. As a matter of fact, if you look up the Message version to this day, I was so disappointed in Eugene Peterson. Normally, I really love that guy. But in this passage of scripture, he said Paul was so irritated at the girl that he spoke to the demon and said, you know, get out. That is not true. There is nothing in that text that suggests that Paul is upset with the girl. What is Paul upset with? What is Paul agitated at? I think Paul was trying to get on with his work of evangelism in the city, and he was accosted by this situation, this oppressive, exploitative, terrible python spirit, men using a girl like for their own profit, you know. And eventually, I think he just literally is like, I cannot proclaim this message and let this thing happen. And so he It says he was agitated, but in a way that is like he was moved back to like compassion. He couldn't stop himself finally from freeing the girl. And the consequences of him freeing the girl are colossal, which again, this is wherever you step into this place, male allies have always told me, I didn't think it would be that big a deal to support women until I started. And then as soon as I started, holy camoly, they'll say, like, man, they came after me. And I'm like, right, welcome to the party, you know, welcome to the party. Yeah. And they came after Paul. And of course, the exploitation of women is related to finance. It's related to theology. It's related to the way they control people. It's related to the whole way the system works. You're interrupting the system. That's what you're doing. And so Paul gets thrown in prison. I was talking to a theologian friend of mine later, and I said, do you think Paul regretted it? Like, do you think Paul's in prison going like, man, was it worth it? And if you keep reading, which is what my friend said, keep reading, he said, they're literally singing and praising God. Because the power of God is most on display when the system's interrupted, when the oppression is stopped, when the person with the least amount of power is empowered and is freed. Like, that's where the power is.
I love that. Thank you. Yeah.
And we need more. We need, and this is hilarious because Paul has been twisted into this woman hater by these weird people taking his scriptures out of context. He is one of the most empowering leaders you'll ever read in the scriptures. And women are way part, like he has women co-laborers and women church planters, and even calls them chief of apostles. So Paul is one of the most liberated men, which I think is one of the great ironies of history, because Paul must be in heaven going like, how did this happen? And I just say we need more men who are so agitated by the way women are being exploited and oppressed that they can't put up with it anymore. And they're willing to pay the cost for it. And if they pay the cost for it, and this is the other part of the story, of course, we know Jesus paid the cost for it and he resurrected. I mean, this is our faith. We don't need to grasp power because we know the one who holds all the power. Paul's in prison, in the inner part of the prison. He's singing because he's done what it is that the gospel is. He's liberated the poor. He's preached good news. He's like shown that God is liberating. And then the whole prison breaks apart by the power of God. Another miracle happens. And this is just Paul. We all want the power of God, but no one's willing to give up their own power to get it. And we need more men. We need more men to actually be so irritated by the systems of patriarchy that they're willing to disrupt them and then pay the cost that comes with that, and see the real power on display as a result. That's what we need.
That's wonderful. So,
Need to Know is a book, a compilation, 26 different diverse authors. There's literally a chapter that's God is not male. That's one of the chapters written by Bob Ekblad on the scriptures. There's a chapter on Paul. There's chapters by people who have specialties in their area, in their field. Christians for Biblical Equality is a website that I always recommend. And Mimi Haddad, who's the director of that, is one of the chapter writers. So she'll talk on complementarianism and egalitarianism. There's like how to set up systems. There's like the problem with the way we mentor, which is one-on-one and male-based. There's problems with the way we view each other. So we haven't even talked about patriarchy and porn, but we should, because patriarchy and porn, porn is literally patriarchal's tool to sexualize everyone and everything. So our relationships have become hyper-sexualized under a tool that is meant to oppress. And it's separated us more than ever before. It's put a lens of fear, the way that we see each other, the way we interact with each other. But no one ever wants to talk about porn, so we never get to that. But porn, the narrative of porn is the subjugation of women. And no one really, everyone thinks, oh, it's a really terrible moral habit or addiction that's just about sexual nature. I'm like, no. You need to know the narrative of porn is about the subjugation of women. Literally, young girls now, porn is so centralized to this, that young girls are believing and being told by their boyfriends that pain is pleasure.
Yeah, that's extraordinary.
Because that's what porn tells them, right? So women experiencing pain is supposed to be pleasurable. This is like the ultimate subjection, subjugation of women. So, and no one really talks about the justice angle of porn, but we probably should, because it's training a whole generation of people in subjugation. So anyway, I think there's a whole bunch of man. Things. We don't talk about porn and Need to Know, but I do talk about it in Better Together, because I think it's one of the main reasons why we don't lead together well in the church, because we never talk about it or deal with it. So Need to Know, I think it's like, I call it like a reference library. So if you're looking for systems, you're looking for theology, you're looking for like ways of thinking about things differently, that's a great resource book. I would highly recommend it. Better Together is almost like a manual for change. So if you're in a board, so for example, that was written for a bunch of people in a boardroom, and they're already four women, but they're looking around the boardroom and they're all men. And they're like nuts. How do we get here and what do we do? So Better Together is more like a manual for training. And there's a course that goes with that if you're part of a leadership team and you want to take a course that's around building equity in your leadership teams. That course is available on a website called Deep and Wide Academy. Which are like small courses that are available for people. And then The Liberating Truth, I don't even know if it's still in print, to tell you the truth. It's been a long time. It's been like 12 years or so. We might do a reprint of it. We'll see. And it's just basically how Jesus empowers women. So hopefully some of those things. DanielleStrickland.com is my website. You can kind of find all the things from there.
Great. And I want to bring us back to where we started this book. The Other Side of Hope. I just feel like we so need a bit of hope at this time. Give us just a one paragraph, a couple of sentences. Why did you write that book?
Okay, The Other Side of Hope. I mean, I wrote it during COVID. I think when we talk about hope, we really talk about it like we want the. I think we talk about it like wishful thinking. We want the shiny painting. We want it all to look perfect. And I went to a art gallery with a friend of mine in South Africa many years ago. And we drove extra long to get there to see this artist that she loved. And the curator of the art gallery had done an installation where he called it The Other Side. And he flipped every piece of art in the whole gallery over, so all you could see was the other side of it.
Wow.
And my friend was furious. I'll never forget. But I was like, this is fascinating, because no matter what kind of art you like, no matter what artist, the other side was the exact same. It was all, you know, frames of wood hammered together. It was all like a little thing where you hung a wire.
It's a bold move.
Canvas with like, you know, staples at the end. And that's what I had a vision of when we really needed hope and we couldn't find it. We needed to actually look at the other side of it. What holds it together? Like, what is the framework of a life that can display hope on it? What does it look like? And so that's kind of where The Other Side of Hope, it's literally a flip book. So you flip it around, one half are just stories of my life and where I found hope.
I love that.
And then the other half is the theory around what kind of life can display hope on it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Danielle, it has been an absolute joy to talk to you. I feel like you've got in the groove. And I feel now I'm cutting you off in your prime. But thank you so much. Thank you for signposting the books and the website. The website, again, is?
DanielleStrickland.com. It's probably the easiest place to go. Yeah.
That's great. Thank you so much for being on the Midfaith Crisis podcast. We really appreciate it. Bless you and all the best for all the future writings and work that you do.
Is your new tagline is burn down the patriarchy. Is that what I heard?
Oh, that's it. Midfaith Crisis. Burn down the patriarchy. You got it.
Same thing. Okay.
Bless you.
Thanks for having me.
Bless you.
Okay. Bye.
Well, that was Joe talking to Danielle Strickland. I thought that was really good. I loved that interview. Well, I squirmed slightly, obviously, because it's very challenging, isn't it? Yeah. Very convicting. But I really, really good. So many good bits in, which we'll largely pick up on next week. But if you had to pick sort of one thing or one or two things that really struck you out of it, what would you say?
It's so hard, isn't it? I mean, definitely the shock in there for me is that more women than men are leaving the church. And so she was saying that in North America, there's more men than women now in church, which that seems extraordinary, doesn't it?
I mean, if it is true, I would say it's a historically unique moment, actually, in certainly the sort of Western church, because even if you go back as far as Augustine was complaining that there were more women than men in the church. And he was saying the women are more faithful than the men. The men just sort of rock up and don't do anything. So I think that's a real turning point, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. And no, I mean, I found all of it really, like you say, really challenging, really good. I'm glad she did her sort of a little aside about pornography, because I never know how to speak about that, because it's such a shameful subject, and it's such, but it's such a huge issue in the church. I mean, when I left pastoral ministry 13 years ago, I mean, really, it was such a massive issue. And I think it's just very helpful the way she was saying, look, this is, you know, we all know it's wrong, and there's so much shame and there's such sin and all that. But to hear her just talk really intelligently about its impact on relationships and what's actually going on, yes. I thought it was really, really helpful. And, you know, somehow we got to find a way to talk about pornography and you know, being a Christian, I think. So, no, all of it was so good. How about you? Mm. Any particular standout things that you want to...
Well, I loved the sort of practical things that you could do. Mm. I did like the idea that, you know, you've got to be against it. You can't be partially against it. You can't keep a bit of the patriarchy.
Yeah.
You know, like, we'll be against it, but, you know, we'll be complementarian. You know, you're still in the system. You're still doing that. You haven't changed anything. You've just put a different label on it.
Yeah.
So that was very powerful. I mean, you know, she... The things that we should do, giving away power. If you have more power, give it away to people who have less. To refuse to comply with the systems, to tell the truth about it. She said that line, and I thought it was great. She said, we need more men to get so irritated about the system that they refuse to comply. I think it was something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought, well, that's something I can do.
Yeah, you're very good at being irritated. Yeah,
she's playing right into my skill set there. I can channel my irritation hugely in this area, and I should. So I thought, you know, there's a lot to digest and a lot to feel, I guess, convicted about a little bit, and to, you know, to think about that. But I think it is really powerful, and I'm going to spread it far and wide. I'm going to get as many people as I can listening to this, because I think it's really important.
Yeah, good. And of course, we, as always, we would love to know, what did you think? Well, did you agree with what Danielle was saying, or did you violently disagree? I mean, either way, love to hear from you, joe@midfaithcrisis.org. We will have a good old feedback session next time.
We will. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for being with us. Thank you, Joe, for doing that interview.
Absolute
that was great.
Privilege. Yeah.
And we will be back with you next week.
See you then. Cheers.